We've had breakfast meetings, and one of the managers will come up and they're saying, oh, you know, they're kind of the rumbling at the kitchen, there's a change of routine and things need to be done, you know, a different routine. I'm sure there's a sort of rumbling of the stomach in the afternoon, people who are kind of used to. And, you know, I suppose perception of monastic retreat brings up in the mind, you know, this is time to get serious, or, you know, is it sometimes perhaps, I mean, certainly for myself, when I first came in contact with a monastic form, one of the things I found a little distant from, certainly at first, was the sort of ceremonial part of practice, the kind of, you know, working with ceremonies. And especially this practice of sharing of blessings, and sometimes it's, they call it the dedication of merit or something of the sort. And I found in my own practice this is something that I've really warmed towards much more and more. And it's one thing, it's very interesting in the monastic life, being a Westerner in a tradition which is very much sort of steeped in Asian culture. In the monastery we'd often have people coming and requesting ceremonies, and they're people from a culture which is very steeped in Dhamma, very steeped in practice, and for them it's something that would always come very naturally. But certainly in my own case to begin with, I used to think, well, yeah, maybe I can learn the chanting and I can be there, but it took me a while to warm up for it. And one of the occasions that really started to change for me was when I was going on a we do these little walkabouts, we call it Tudong. I've done a few in England where we just take our alms bowl and robes and go walking. And I was walking from Chithurst Monastery, where I lived, to my family home, my mother's place, about 120 miles or so. And I'm just going very, very simply, just with the clothes pretty well I've got here now, and a bag and a bowl, and just leaving the monastery door and going for it. And so a lot of the time, you know, we're very much dependent on generosity of others, entirely, and we never really knew whether we were going to eat or find any shelter. And I can remember one occasion where I found myself in a town, and I was very tired and hungry. We'd had to walk about 15 miles that morning, and we had to get there fairly early in the morning to find enough time to make, you know, to move into an area where there may be some food shopping around. So I was standing there, and I was kind of exhausted, and in the way we practice, we just stand there with our alms bowls. I can remember a little lady came past. She's one of the first people who spotted us, and rushed over and wanted to give us some coins and some money, which was nice. And I just sort of said, "Well, it's very, bless you. It's a lot of, you know, it's a nice offering, but we don't accept money." So she kind of, oh, surprised, and then she kind of waited along a bit more, and kind of looked. Questioned a bit more, and then explained that some food would be, you know, we would appreciate some food. And she became very excited because she thought, oh, these are real monks. and she would actually, she stood in the street for a little while, and she'd be pointing to us and saying, look, real monks, they want food. They want, you know, which is wonderful, wonderful blessing for us, because we train ourselves not to ask. So she was doing the whole thing. Like our doing a promotion for us, so it's wonderful to have her there. And she went off, and she was I would say probably in her 80s, and she had a little trundly, one of these little baskets with wheels on. She raced off and got loaded herself with lots of very carefully thought out things. Hot days, so she got drinks, and you know, really put some effort into it. Gave us all these things. In the meantime, she made contact with other people who also said, "Oh, well, I'm going to the shops. I'll be back." So we found ourselves kind of in a situation of receiving lots and lots of far too much. So we found, you know, we were kind of put in a position where I have to stay there for a while and just take all this. I was just kind of taking it all up. It was a wonderful thing. And this little lady was standing in front of me, and she kept holding my arm and saying, "Oh, you know, real monks." She's very excited, and she said, "You know," and she was quite emotional, and she was saying, "You know, I really don't know. I wonder whether you could help me, or whether you could." No, that's right. She asked me if I could pray for her, and I said, "Oh, yeah. What do you want? What, you know? Yeah, we'd certainly do that." And she said, "Well, just about a few months ago, I lost my husband." And she said they'd been married for 50 years. And she was very kind of emotional about describing it. And she said, "You know, I'm not sure that I'm going crazy. You know, I sit in the sofa where we used to sit, and I put his pullover next to me on the sofa, and I put the arm of this sweater around, you know, kind of." And you think, oh, you know, it's kind of really touching kind of things. And she said, "You know, I'd like to send some prayers for him, you know, do something." And I thought, this is an extraordinary lady. And so I started to try and explain. I said that we would do some chanting. Once we'd collected our food, we'd go back out of the village and we'd do some chanting, and we'd dedicate this for the well-being of her husband. And then I thought, well, I'll try and explain a little bit more about what it means. And I had to do it fairly briefly, but the theory being really is that in performing a kind of act of generosity, kindness, it's very, very difficult to kind of making contact, you know, in a direct way with somebody, a departed loved one or relative. But the story or the theory behind it is that there are beings in this world, the heavenly realms, the deva realms, who really, really enjoy and appreciate and kind of focus very much on acts of kindness and generosity. They really get a hit off it and enjoy it. They think, wow, this is wonderful, and they kind of, it's something that they will focus upon. And if in an act of kind of then dedicating that to somebody who's passed away, it's like they become a messenger, because these beings certainly will know where the loved one had gone, you know, if their rebirth or where they were, and they would be able to then, you know, act like protectors or send some good things on. So it was kind of, that was the theory. And I said, you know, in doing what you've done, it's a beauty, you know, explaining that this is something that's obviously come very naturally from her. And you know, we would certainly dedicate these offerings to her husband. And she just kind of, she started weeping. She was very moved, and she said, "You know, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard." And she moved away from this, and I could see she just sat. She just sat on a little wall opposite for quite a while, and she was kind of very tearful, but it was tears of joy. You know, there wasn't grief there. It was kind of, you think, wow. And I left with tears as well. And I realised that actually, yeah, you know, there's a real kind of a relevance to practicing with this kind of ritual way, actually. And you know, the part of the chanting when we come down collecting the alms food from the Ajahn Amro, he'll often start with like a little solo. And I hope I can get it right, but more or less the what it's saying is like, just as, incidentally, during this ceremony, when we're chanting these things, quite often people from Thailand and Buddhist cultures, they like to do what's called a water pouring ceremony, where you have a little vessel, empty vessel, and it's standing inside a larger one, and they pour water into the small one and it overflows. And it's kind of, the chant says something like, you know, just as all the water flows into the rivers and then overflows into the sea, in the same way that, you know, in making an offering to something, you know, is worthy, making a gesture of generosity to a group of monastics or people who are practicing towards realizing truth. This is something of an extraordinary meritorious act, and in doing that, it would overflow rather than just staying contained within that community. The blessings can overflow. So it's and I found, you know, after having witnessed this many times in my life as a monk, I see more and more value of it. But it's still what I think became more apparent in my own practice is when I started looking at furthering that, really, and seeing that it's not just one idea. Now, you may say, oh yeah, you know, devas, heavenly beings, are the world's, you know, maybe not, you know, it's like there's a, maybe you don't, you know, that's something that's very difficult to tap into. But actually, I've also discovered in practice, very much in dealing with grief, these things, a dedication of blessings is something I've personally found very, very useful. Yeah, it's a very healing practice. And it was interesting when I started looking at all the messages appearing on the shrine, it really tripped in a few things for me. I was recollecting some of the... I think most of us have been touched and will either have or certainly will experience grief at the loss of a loved one. And I know in my own life I had, not long before I came to live in the monastery, to leave the home life, my father took his life, which was something he did it like a couple of days, a few days after I was explaining to him that I really, you know, I was kind of somewhat disillusioned with what was going on. I was looking at moving to the monastery. And it was a time when, in his life, he was somebody who used to get, he suffered a great deal from depression. And although, you know, that was kind of very, very difficult for us, and over the years it brought us very, very close. And so, you know, he would sort of often kind of lean on me a lot and would very much be looking at me for help and support when he was really low. So naturally, you know, I was kind of, the whole experience was something of a horrendous shock, you know. There was a period in my life, you know, where I was just kind of very numbed by the whole thing. And there was a long, long period where you know, I had a very strong image in my mind of my father's corpse, and it kind of, it was very a very violent death, and it, you know, I kind of had a very strong image in my mind of a very distorted and stressed image, very violent image. So it was, for a long time, it was something which you know, it was kind of very much a central focus in my meditation practice. And there was a kind of recognition that there was that sort of feeling of helplessness, not really knowing, quite understanding how we can, what I can do, you know, how I could, and a sense that I'd like to, you know, there's an enormous sense of loss, and also just the fact that I could no longer communicate, and I could no longer, you know, this kind of a sense of woundedness and inability to understand how to resolve that. And then, but as time went on, I discovered that once I'd moved into Sangha life, and there was this sort of, I realised that there was kind of a golden opportunity to start really looking very closely at healing some of these things. So much of my, you know, my ordination ceremony was very consciously dedicated, this, you know, what I was doing for the well-being of my father. And many acts of just generosity, kindness, I would make of kind, you know, anything that I felt was really, you know, I had uplifting, I would think of Don and say, yeah, you know, this was. And as I kept working with this, and it was, things started to change. And it was kind of quite beautiful, actually, because what was happening in my dreams and my memories of him, instead of a kind of a very frightened, tortured being that would appear in my mind, slowly they were being transplanted by a sense of kind of joy and sharing and happiness and contentment. You know, it was just like very clearly changing that kind of impression in the mind. So it's, you know, it does, even in if we consider the way you know, the theoretical side of devas, the feeling of, you know, how is it we can resolve some of these, the emptiness in our lives, that resolve the woundedness, resolve that sense of loss, then you know, this is something I find an extraordinarily skillful means. One of strongest that's one of the most powerful of the what we call Brahma Vihara, of these kind of boundless realms, boundless experiences, is one of the I've practiced with a lot in this area has been mudita. Mudita is sometimes, you know, I've seen it translated as joy or gladness, but it seems kind of a hollow experience. I often feel it very much more as, it's like the opposite of envy. It's kind of a real genuine resonance, a kind of joy and recognition of blessing of others' good fortune. Like that sort of sense of seeing, you know, when somebody else wins the prize and resonating with their joy, you know, it's a sense, it's a very, and this is something that you know, I find very, very good to ponder on. I know certainly in the monastery there's sometimes we find these occasions where mind can get kind of, you know, I can feel something of an uphill experience. And sometimes I find, you know, it kind of it can get, there's a dryness or I need to kind of find something to dig myself out of an emotional hole. And one of the things I often like to do is just little anonymous acts of generosity or kindness. You know, so I would wash somebody's socks for them, or, you know, and put them out and so they wouldn't know it was me, or I'd tidy something up, and then but I'd be around when they spotted it. It's delightful. It's really worth it. It's one of these things, and you recognise that this is really what, you know, sharing of blessings is about. And so it's, I mean, in these occasions, it's very, and what I find very fruitful just to contemplate you know, we're starting to practice in a way of actually looking for opportunities for sharing of blessings, you know, to actually creating blessings in order to share them. Looking for opportunities to brighten the heart and mind. And a lot of the time, I'm sure you're very aware, in a sort of retreat mode, it can be, mind can get kind of quite cramped, issues can arise, emotions and feelings can come up, and the whole thing becomes kind of, you're walking around with this lump. Oh, that one again, you know, it's a hard. Or it's difficult to move the mind from a particular fixation or emotion. And certainly, you know, the practice of what we're doing here, of just recollecting, I could really sense the kind of the power, there's a very, very strong kind of heartfelt and emotional charge coming in here with all these things. You know, recognize it's something that we're all very familiar with. And it's something that we're all, you know, we are practicing with. And often it's very easy in grief, you know, to just, there's a sense of kind of reveling in it or confusion or a sense of loss. But it's, I think, with, you know, when we're reflecting very skillfully, it can actually, we can transform these things into a blessing. In going, I'm just let the mind wander on into something kind of connected. I was thinking of this, facing the ghost. I remember there's a lovely story of somebody telling me a story of a Hungarian, I think, folk tale about a little town, a little village, which was haunted by a ghost, or like a demon. And there was only one path. They were surrounded by mountains. There's one road out, and this thing was there, looming. And nobody was going out anywhere. They weren't going to the neighbouring town. This thing was there, and there was kind of there were very few people would venture out. One or two did and came scuttling back again. And it was big and it was ugly, and it was definitely to be avoided. Until there was a young child, kind of a young kid. He thought, "Oh, I know what this was." So he decided to go and check it out. And sure enough, he went down this road, and there it was, this enormous fire-breathing monster standing in the middle of the road. And he thought, "Wow, you know, it's incredible." And what he did, rather than just run off, he just took like a step forward, just a small step. And it had this impression it got a little bit smaller. You know, that's interesting. So he took another step, you know, and this continued happening until he got right up to it, and it was just a, you know, the size of a pepper pot on the rock. And he looked at this thing and he said, "Well, you know, so what are you? Who are you?" And this little thing says, "Fear. Fear." You know, it's something that it's very interesting just now. I mean, I started off this thing with a dry throat, and then gradually as I starts to loosen up. I was thinking that, you know, Ajahn Amaro would be talking for an hour, and this is I said all the best bits. Interesting, isn't it? So I think in closing I would encourage that to explore this practice of sharing blessings. Don't take my word for it. Don't take, you know, check it out for yourself. I found it very rewarding, very helpful, and it starts to turn the tide. It heals. And it tends to move the mind very much more into more of an open and expansive and receptive space. Anyone?
Annamayang ovadagata sadukarang gadamase sadhu 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 anmodami. So just to continue the theme for the evening, we'll close with the sharing of blessings. Maybe we'll do the Pali version, now that you're becoming extraordinarily adept in Pali pronunciation. That's page 21. Need a bit more light, I think. Yeah. There's some discussion, I think.
Do you want to mention either now or after the chanting that we're going to step to midnight?
You can.
Oh, I guess I could.
Chant first.
Yeah, now we'll chant first. And, okay. Annamaya no disanaditana gatayo manamase
Vina punya kammena
upajaya gunutara acharyo pakara chamata pita chanyataka suryo chandima raja gunavanda narabhija brahma mara chahinda chalokapala chadevata yamomita manusa chamaja ta verika pita sabe sada suki honda punyani pakatani me sukanja divina denduki pangbape tawo matang imina punya kamena imina ude sena chaki paham sulabe chevata nupadana chenanang ye sandhane hina dhamma yavani manato mamana sandh savada yeva yata jato bhave bhave uchuchitam satipanya saleko viriya minamara labanduno kasankatuncha viriye sume bhunadi pavaronato tamo nato varutamo nato pache kambodo cha sangho nato taro mamante so tamanu bhave namaro kasang labandu
as a way to extend the theme into the evening. Venerable Achalo and myself have decided to stay up till the witching hour and create some blessings and share the blessings. And so if anyone would like to do that, then most welcome to join us. I'm staying out to meditate, sitting and walking till midnight.
The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. The teaching, so completely explained by him, I bow to the Dhamma. The Blessed One's disciples, who have practiced well, I bow to the Sangha.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.